From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall.
And I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. This weekend is Philly Pride, and this year it will mark the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots in New York City.
Well, the myth that we live with today is that the gay movement began with the Stonewall riots in June of 1969. And while I would be the last person to deny that the Stonewall riots were important, I think we get a much richer sense of the complexities of LGBT history if we reach back and look at the developments that preceded Stonewall, the developments before Stonewall that were changing minds, changing hearts, changing laws.
Mark Stein is a professor of queer history at my alma mater, San Francisco State University. Go Gators! He says, before Stonewall, there was another group of gay and lesbian protest pioneers. They called themselves the Annual Reminders, and they chose to gather in the place where the country was founded, right here in Philadelphia.
The texts from the first demonstration reference the need to remind Americans of their central and core values of what the country was supposed to stand for. An annual became annual in 1966 once the first demonstration had been successful.
What were the annual reminders, and why don't we hear more about them as part of LGBTQ history?
Today on The Why, remembering the reminders.
We talked to Mark about how these protests were representative of a generational and cultural struggle that was taking place throughout the country and within the gay rights movement.
So in 1965, a group of gay men and women held a demonstration in front of Independence Hall. Can you describe what they did?
Yes. The demonstration was organized by a group called East Coast Homophile Organizations, and it was a coalition of groups from New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. And the idea was march in front of Independence Hall on July 4th. That was critical. Both celebrate American patriotic values, but also challenge the United States about its failure to live up to those values.
So that's why it was in Philadelphia.
Exactly. That's why the idea, birthplace of the nation, signing of the Declaration and the Constitution, those would be useful ways to signal the denial of rights that gay and lesbian people experienced. There was a lot of attention to employment rights, a lot of references to inclusion in the military. So again, references to core concepts in the Declaration of Independence, in the Constitution, in American culture writ large.
So two people who were central in this movement in the mid-60s were Frank Kameny and Barbara Giddings. Can you talk about both of them?
That's right. Frank Kameny was a leader of Mattachine, Washington, and Barbara Giddings was affiliated with several organizations, but in this period she was the editor of the national lesbian magazine called The Ladder.
We were considered weird and sick and perverted and just plain wrong. Even most of the good straight citizens of this country had been brainwashed into thinking that we were that way.
And she, Barbara, and her partner, Kay LaHusen, were very involved in this turn to direct action, militancy, marching in protests.
And just, if you could talk about kind of how these demonstrations looked. What were people wearing? How were they acting?
Well, in fact, that was a very key issue for the demonstrators. Frank Kameny was absolutely strong-minded about the notion that these should be respectable demonstrations.
My approach was, we want them to employ us. Therefore, within the normal mode of the day, we have to give the appearance of being employable.
There were official rules. The men were supposed to wear suits and ties. The women were supposed to wear dresses. A few years later, it relaxed so that women could wear skirts and business suits. But they were supposed to be well-dressed demonstrators. The signs had to be in conformity with all sorts of rules about what could and what could not be said. There was not supposed to be talking or physical displays of affection on the picket line.
We had a dress code and we had a conduct code for the picketing demonstrations, and they were very sedate. But I've strongly supported them at the time, and I still believe that they were right for the time.
And I think it's an incredibly interesting moment. 1965, many other social movements in the United States were radicalizing and rejecting some of the strategies of respectability that had been important in the earlier civil rights protests. But the homophile movement and those annual reminders, they stuck with the older style, so always with requirements that demonstrators be well-dressed, conform with the rules, and show that gays and lesbians were not radical revolutionaries, but were asking for inclusion in American society.
So, Mark, how racially diverse were the annual reminder protesters?
The protesters were mostly white, but I think it's always important to say not exclusively white. And some accounts of the annual reminders claim that they were all male and all white, and that's not true. I think it was a few things. I think the movement itself was majority white, sometimes overwhelmingly white. So the people who participated were some of the most active participants in the movement. And again, I don't think we should overstate that, but because there always were people of color, Latinos, Asian Americans, African Americans, and some Native Americans involved in the homophile movement.
Could it be, Mark, that maybe they had a whole lot more to lose?
I think that's absolutely right. I think that it's race in combination with class, where somebody who really lives paycheck to paycheck could not necessarily afford to risk being fired, which was perfectly legal then, as it is now in many places, because they were seen protesting on gay issues.
Mark, the annual reminders happened every year from 1965 to 1969. What happened in 1969?
Well, the main thing that happened, the Stonewall riots in New York City in late June. Police raid on the Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village. The response was furious. Days of protests and rioting occurred. And today, the Stonewall riots are commonly viewed as a transformational moment that led to mass mobilization and the radicalization of the LGBT movement. Well, the July 4th annual reminder was already scheduled at the time that the Stonewall riots occurred. And so 1 week after the riots began, and literally just a day or two after the last of the riots ended, the annual reminder took place. And in many respects, it was in keeping with the previous years. Mm-hmm. There were these formal rules. But some of the participants, and especially the younger participants, and especially the participants from New York, had been radicalized by the riots. The episode that I think captures the generational divide and the political division that had opened up was on the picket line, same-sex couples began to hold hands. Some of the younger demonstrators insisted on holding hands.
That was something Frank Kameny forbid in previous instances.
Absolutely. And defiantly, I think the young activists knew what they were doing. I think it was first two men and then two women held hands, and the young people were quoted in the newspaper account explaining that the old style of the demonstrations were no longer appropriate for the new moment, that we were in a new era after the Stonewall riots, and there was nothing wrong with same-sex handholding, nothing wrong with displaying same-sex affection in a context like this.
We had cracked the cocoon of invisibility. We had finally stepped forward and said to the public, I am not going to live in a closet anymore. It's stuffy in there, and I am not going to continue to live my life under a rock to protect your feelings. I'm going to live the way I want to, openly and proudly, as a gay person.
And what do you think was behind that? Do you think it was the fact that this riot had happened in New York, or do you think it was just something that was trending that way anyway?
I think it was a bit of both. Obviously, the riots immediately, for at least folks on the East Coast, became a galvanizing symbol and icon of resistance. But also, by the late 60s, by 68, by 69, we've experienced the riots at the Democratic Convention.
Members of the Youth International Party, Yippies they called themselves, converged on Chicago. They said they were there to protest the war, poverty, racism, and other social ills.
There have been five summers of riots and rebellions in African-American urban communities.
Whole blocks are now burning at dusk. The National Guard has moved in. The state police are cordoning off dozens of blocks of this west side. At this moment,
the counterculture is increasingly influential, so even the clothes people are wearing.
We had Woodstock.
Woodstock, yeah. Exactly.
But what was the impact of the annual reminders? What did they teach us?
I think it laid the foundations for the later mobilization and radicalization just by putting the idea into more and more people's heads that gay people could stand up for their rights, engage in direct action protests, model themselves on other successful social movements. So on that level, I think it was foundational, even though by 1969 it was seen as something whose time had ended.
Like you said, the reminders ended with this sort of cultural change and this backlash against really a whole strategy that had been employed before of this goal of assimilating, of saying, you know, we're just like you and we just want rights like everybody else has. There was a backlash against that. In more recent years, we've seen in things like the push for marriage equality, again, like the strategy employed, like, we are just want to have a normal family. Do you think there will always be this sort of push and pull between those two strategies?
I do think so. At least I don't see them ending anytime soon. And inclusion in marriage, inclusion in the military, two of the great successes over the last couple of decades, really are the culmination of the strategy, I think, that was in evidence in the annual reminders. But they're not necessarily a culmination of the strategy of the post-Stonewall gay liberationists and lesbian feminists who were calling for revolutionary transformation. So those divisions exist at the time, and those divisions continue to exist today.
Mark, thank you so much.
Thanks,
for coming
Mark.
In today.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Equality Forum and Malcolm Lazen for providing audio from the documentary film Gay Pioneers.
The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari. This episode was produced by our intern, Xavier Lopez.
Tweet us at AnnetteJH or at Shai Ben-Yaakov.
We'll be back tomorrow.